independent mind.
Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You are listening to It's All About Food. I don't know if you can hear what's going on in the background. I try and close all the windows and make things quiet, but we've had nonstop sirens going on here in New York City for about 3 months, and I thought they were slowing down, but the last few days they seem to be nonstop. So we're going to hear them throughout the program, and I just hope that those that are in need will get the help that they need and heal. Okay, I also wanted to tell you that Gary DeMattei says hello to everybody. He's not here today, but he's thinking about all of you and sends his love. All right, but who is here with me today? That's what's exciting. We've got Vasanto Molina, who is a registered dietitian and co-author of books and has that have won awards in the United States and Canada and received star rating by American Library Association as the go-to books on plant-based nutrition. Most recent is The Kick, Diabetes Cookbook with dietitian Brenda Davis. And Vasanto has taught nutrition at the University of British Columbia and at Seattle's Bastyr University. She's a government consultant, a lead author of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics position paper on vegetarian diets, and an internationally known speaker. This is a very brief bio. I asked her for a brief bio, but you really need to go to her website, nutrispeak.ca, Nutri, N-U-T-R-I, speak.ca. There is a wealth of information. This person has done an amazing amount of work and continues. So I'm very excited to introduce my friend and colleague, Vasanto.
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Great. Good to talk with you. I'm really well from the other side of North America.
I know. This is amazing.
West
on the other side of North America and another country.
Another country, too, except that usually I'm traveling all over the place, you know, across the U.S. and over to Europe and lots of places, but not now.
No. How long have you been home?
I was going to go to the Queen Charlotte Islands, actually, right around now, which is a beautiful indigenous place that's very untouched. And that was my only trip since January. I was down in L.A. and visiting a potential co-author, and also we have a grandson there. We've just been visiting grandsons by Zoom lately, so been staying home, and it's actually kind of a pleasure, you know.
I agree with you. Much as I would like to see things change and things move in a positive direction, we live across from a park and a middle school, and usually in the good weather especially, it's noisy with families with young children during the day, and then these fun-loving teens and young adults who are in the park when it's locked in the evening and they shouldn't be there. And it's in a space surrounded by lots of brick apartment buildings that kind of amplifies the sound in the center. So it can be really noisy.
Oh, yeah.
But the last 3 months, it's been so lovely and calm.
Good for you.
Yeah, and we have a terrace that overlooks the park, and it's my favorite place to be right now.
Wow, that's been so nice.
Yeah, yeah, so I always like to look at the bright side.
Yeah,
and aside from the sirens that we hear nonstop around here, everything else has been very peaceful.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to thank you for being so generous, as you always are, with your time. And you are a wealth of information. You have been involved in nutrition on so many levels for so long.
That's right. It's over five decades now that I've been a dietitian since 1965. Yeah, I'm 78 and still thriving, going out hiking all the time and in good health, and still enjoying working because, I mean, things are just going so wonderfully. And when we started writing books, you know, the word vegan wasn't well known at all, and our understanding of the numerous advantages of going plant-based weren't recognized. And so we've had a really good time almost like being leaders in you know, how to put together nutrition when you go in a more plant-based direction and really helping people. And then so many people are interested in this now, whether it's for reducing their risk of type 2 diabetes or cardiovascular disease or keeping their weight where they want to, or whether it's for environmental reasons or whether it's for animal rights reasons, or now whether it's for reducing our risk of the COVID virus. It's just amazing how many different reasons there are and how many people are switching.
You could easily say to many people, I told you so. But you're not that kind of person.
No, it doesn't work very well either.
And, no, you know, but you did know
I find,
for
yeah,
so long.
A lot of people, we're sort of picking this as our important issue, but so many people are working on other parallel, hugely important issues like racial injustice, you know, lessening all the problems there, or helping underprivileged kids, or, you know, they're just all kinds of ways we can make the world better. So this is the one that I picked to work on as a main focus for work, and Brenda Davis as well.
Yes, well, we're grateful for both of you. This show is called It's All About Food, and while you bring up a couple of other very important issues, I think it's all about food, and food touches everything.
It seems to, yeah.
Yeah, it does. Right. So, well, we're going to talk about your book, Kick Diabetes Cookbook. And before we break into it, actually, I'm cracking open the book and looking at the first few pages. I just want people to know what a wonderful, kind, compassionate person you are, too. And it's obvious in the book because you put your acknowledgments first. And that doesn't always happen in a book. Sometimes the acknowledgments are at the end, a second thought.
Oh, that's right. And, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yes, and you're right up front. And another thing I want to mention, because when I read the acknowledgments, you talk about all the people that help you put this book together. There are a lot of cookbooks out there today. Unfortunately, there are lots and lots of vegan cookbooks out there today. And unfortunately, many of them are thrown together, not very careful. Recipes are obviously not tested, and that's not the case with this book.
That's true. We had quite a team. We like to have people who barely know, you know, which end of a spoon to hold or have a knife in their kitchen, you know, and a cutting board. You know, people that are just beginning the whole thing, and also people who are pretty gourmet and they are sensitive in their taste, and, you know, so we try and keep things simple so that everybody can get the ingredients really easily. They're accessible, but they still taste really good. And, you know, so that combination of healthy, delicious, and easy is what we aim for. So we had this team of people that were testing, some of them way better recipe testers than I am. It was really fun. And then we'd have a rating chart and all kinds of questions, and they helped us improve recipes in a few cases. And then I did nutritional analysis, and Brenda Davis did as well, so that all of our recipes do have the nutritional analysis below them. And by the way, this podcast or interview is related to the Kick Diabetes Cookbook, but we thought this could easily be a book related to reducing your risk of cardiovascular disease or how to manage your weight, like if you want to lose weight or manage without gaining. The recipes all fit.
This way of eating, there's no reason not to eat this way. It's the right way for your health. It's the right way to attain your ideal weight. It's the right way to eat if you care about other sentient beings on this planet. It's the right way to eat if you care about the health of the environment.
That's right. Yeah.
So we purposely
made this book have no added oil, like extracted oil. Mm-hmm. So even though coconut oil and olive oil might be, in some perspectives, considered health foods, we didn't include extracted oils. So for fats, we've got things like tahini or avocados, whole foods, and we didn't have any extracted sugars. So there's no glucose or maple syrup or white sugar, brown sugar, cane sugar. There's no extracted sugars either. There's dates, a bit of sweeteners or fruit. So again, whole foods.
I love that. And while you're bringing that up, let's talk about diabetes and the history of it. I understand your dad worked. He was a physiologist?
That's right. He was. He was a physiologist who had the privilege of working with Sir Frederick Banting and Charles Best, who discovered insulin at the University of Toronto and purified it and made it available for treatment of diabetes, and ended up getting a Nobel Prize, Banting did, for his work. And so it was a real game changer for people who had, at that point, mainly it was type 1 diabetes, where they just didn't have insulin. Getting diabetes was a death sentence. Well, my dad came along later than 1923. He started working with them in the early 1940s, and he was a graduate student in physiology at the University of Toronto, but he had that privilege of working with Sir Frederick Banting and Charles Best.
Our understanding of this disease has changed dramatically over the decades, and I think a lot of people have an understanding of what the causes are, but even still today, a lot of myths are still given out with the medical profession, unfortunately.
That's true, yeah. And also, you know, people think that their doctors will know a lot of this stuff about how to reverse diabetes, but they do not study that. Often they'll take like 3 hours of nutrition, if that, and they won't be learning really healthy aspects of nutrition, just a few basics. And it's just the same that I, as a dietitian, don't learn about surgery or most of the pharmaceuticals. That's what doctors learn about. They learn, you know, how to turn around disease in certain ways, but they do not learn lifestyle stuff about how to turn around chronic disease. A few of them focus on that and are real leaders in the medical world, but most do not understand that.
Hold on a minute, Visanto. We know this about doctors, and we've got the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, a collection of doctors and medical practitioners and health-related practitioners that are trying to change that, along with some other organizations. But dietitians, I can't tell you how many dietitians I have spoken to in the last few decades that don't know anything either, especially in hospitals.
That's true. Oh, it is true. Yeah. It's even now, I had I help some students at university who are in dietetics programs do some writing. Every year I have a couple of them. I kind of mentor them. And so I had one working on environmental reasons for going more plant-based, and one working on reducing risk of pandemics by going more plant-based. And neither of them had studied anything significant about plant-based eating. So, you know, so they will all be thinking like they barely understand that there's differences in types of carbohydrates in a certain way, you know. So they'll think, for example, that low carb is, you know, you cut out the carbohydrates instead of looking at refined carbohydrates and simple sugars and how vast a difference there is there.
So what's going on with education with dietitians? Is it getting better?
It is getting better. Yeah, and I think every week, at least I have young people writing to me. You know, I'm a high school student wanting to go into nutrition, or I'm a dietetic student and I want to do the kind of work you do. And so, yeah, there are more people getting interested in this, and we can encourage them. There's lots of work, it turns out. But often, well, it's probably true in many professions, you have to take on and learn the things that you're really interested in beyond what you learn when you're going through your degree programs.
Now, there was a study, and I don't remember, you know this, but I don't, done a long time ago, where people were healed from diabetes on a all processed high sugar and rice, and not foods that we consider particularly healthy. But what it was showing was our belief of what caused this disease was not true. And now in your, do you know what study I'm talking about?
I'm not quite sure. I mean, no. Continue.
Yeah. I should have prepared it. It was a long time ago where some doctor helped a lot of patients by putting them on this rice and sugar kind of diet. I'll have to get back to you on that one. But the point was, because a lot of people now, well, not a lot of people, but the people in my circles talk about how animal fat has a significant contribution to causing this disease and not allowing the insulin to get into the cells.
That's exactly right. It really impacts. So there's the two types of diabetes. Well, three really, or three or four. But there's type 1 diabetes where the person does not have insulin. And so that is a different situation from type 2 diabetes where is insulin, mainly initially, and sometimes it doesn't persist with enough insulin. But the problem is mainly the insulin receptors. So insulin can't help glucose to get into the cells. And the damage is done because there's these really high blood sugar levels going through, but the sugar can't get into the cells because of the insulin receptors. And that is related to fat in the diet.
Okay, I just did a quick Google search. Thank you, Internet, for being so amazing and cooperative. But the study I was talking about was the 1939 study by Dr. Walter Kempner, a Duke University professor emeritus of medicine, and he came up with the rice diet of rice, sugar, fruit, and fruit juices. Anyway, that was a long time ago. But what I wanted to say is you specifically didn't use oil or refined sugars in this cookbook. Because, and I'm going to guess, it's not just about, like you said, diabetes, but it's more like the best thing, the best foods we can put in our bodies.
Yeah, and also when it's a whole food, then we have a lot of fiber, which helps the gradual delivery of carbohydrates to places it's needed. We have vitamins and minerals, and those things are lost when either fat or sugar is extracted.
Okay, I'm opening up to your book, Chapter 1. I'm looking at your first table, Fiber in Common Foods. Fiber is...
That's right, yeah.
Fiber is like the most amazing nutrient and... slowly getting more press. But at the top of the list here, fiber in grams are beans, lentils, and split peas, cooked 1 cup, 14 to 17 grams of fiber, and everything else underneath has significantly less. Beans.
Uh-huh.
beans are just superfoods.
They are. So one of the interesting things that I had in my life was my family, even though they have quite a few brilliant people that are either, you know, professors or actors or whatever, they also have a fair number of alcoholics. So anyway, I got interested in this, alcoholics and diabetics. And so I learned in the 80s, I read a book called Eating Right to Live Sober, and it looked at how different people handle glucose. And this is related to our pancreas. And it has a genetic component. You know, we inherit a certain organs. They're able to keep our blood sugar level very easily, or that doesn't do it very well. And so I started to realize that in my family, we would have sugar or alcohol come in, and there'd be a rise in blood sugar in a lot of drinks, and then a crash. And so then we'd want to finish off everything in sight. Like there was this up and down thing. And we didn't maintain our blood glucose at a level as well as some people do. And so I started to look at, and there were some twin studies done in Scandinavia where people ended up, there were twins that were adopted into different families, so they had quite different environments, but maybe both were from an alcoholic family or family with a lot of diabetes, or both, usually. And they would still end up having these blood sugar fluctuations. So at that point, as a dietitian, I went down to the Betty Ford Center and talked to their dietitians and learned a lot about foods and how they impact our blood glucose levels. And I found out that for those of us who have this situation, you know, where our blood sugar can crash like that, we can help ourselves by eating a lot of beans, peas, lentils, legumes that have this connection of fiber with carbohydrates. And that means there's a very slow, gradual delivery of carbohydrate to the cells. And because our brains run on carbohydrate, like that's the fuel that runs your brain, even though you think sugar's not good. Well, it's actually how your brain runs. But if you get this gradual delivery, just a few molecules and a few, and that's what happens with whole foods, fiber foods, with legumes, then your blood sugar can stay more level.
Very good. Thank you. All right. The next page that I'm looking at is table 2, the glycemic index and glycemic load of common foods.
Yeah.
And these are important things to consider. But I also want to talk about how these rating systems are not the end all, because there are different rating systems that will rate certain foods higher in something but not something else. And it's good
That's
to
right.
know all of
yeah.
this stuff, but we need a variety.
We do, yeah.
Yeah, so talk about the glycemic index and the glycemic load and why they matter, if they matter.
Well, they're one way of looking at it, and Dr. David Jenkins at the University of Toronto developed that for looking essentially at just the same thing I was talking about. They looked at different foods that would deliver, say, 50 grams of carbohydrate, and looked at the impact on blood sugar and how they affected our blood sugar, whether there was just a whoosh all at once. Okay, Karen, here you go. You know, here's all the sugar. Like if you have a big gulp at the 7-Eleven or something, you know, or if it's a carbohydrate food that gives you, like hummus, that'll give you just a gradual delivery. And so glycemic index can reflect that kind of impact, you know, how a food does that. And then glycemic load takes it a little bit further and assesses that in terms of serving size.
Okay, so here's one that confused me, and maybe you can talk a little bit about it. So I'm looking at white spaghetti, which in my book, is not the most nutritious food. And it actually has a low, a green light for glycemic index of 49. And then it has a red light for glycemic load of 24. And then millet is a very high glycemic index of 71, and it has a very similar glycemic load as white spaghetti. Can you tell me how to look at that?
I don't know why pasta's that way. It must be just somehow how the molecule is arranged with the fiber, because there even still is some fiber in white spaghetti. But because pasta has a surprisingly low glycemic index. But what we find more and more is that to get a really good glycemic index, like for somebody who's trying to keep their blood sugar level and eat relatively low refined carbs, what you would go to is whole grains, and millet isn't particularly helpful there, but even better still are the legumes. So I really focus a lot on the legumes and not so much on the carbohydrates. And for all of those carbohydrates, you've got to keep the portions small, those what we consider carbohydrate foods that are high in starches. Does that make sense,
so,
what I said?
Yeah, so grains, even whole grains, are not an unlimited food, whereas
that is exactly
a bean
right.
is.
Yeah, that's right.
Right,
and,
okay.
Yeah.
That works for me.
Good, okay.
All right.
And all these numbers, too, it depends what you're eating with it. Like, a lot of times these days, people do actually just drink a whole, big gulp bottle of soda or sugar-laden soda or something like that. But it also is impacted by what foods we're eating together. So if you include, if you just have a little bit of high glycemic food, but you have lots of other low glycemic foods at the same meal, it levels it out quite helpfully.
Now, included in the Kick Diabetes Cookbook, which has lots of wonderful recipes, we might touch on some of those. You also include the Kick Diabetes Lifestyle, and there's a number of things that are included that really everyone should include in a healthy lifestyle.
That's
one of those
true.
Things,
we're finding
obviously,
it like
is fish.
To prevent Alzheimer's even. Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. Okay, carry on. Yeah.
Physical activity is in there. And the first thing I want to ask you is, when I talked to you the last time, which was 6 long years ago, you were doing marathons and triathlons.
No, I was doing, I'll tell you the fun thing. I was doing triathlons. But when you tell people you do triathlons, in their head, they make it into marathons.
Yes,
so you get triple the credit from what you actually did.
Well, wait a minute. A triathlon isn't easy.
Oh, no, it isn't easy, but it's not a marathon. I don't actually have that high respect for marathons for everybody, because it's a lot of pounding on your joints.
Mm-hmm.
And I think triathlon's actually more healthy, because you've got your run, you've got your swim, which has a different kind of motion. You've got your cycling, which isn't so much pounding. So I think it's a good mix, but the thing for exercise is for people to do something that they enjoy and to really look around. If you don't know, okay, I don't enjoy anything, well, to start finding something you do. Maybe it's, instead of sitting in a cafe with your friend, going for a walk around the park, which we can do even in COVID times, 6-foot distance.
And if you wear a mask.
That's right. And so many people.
There
are
people
are
in my neighborhood
that
don't wear masks. Most of them do, but some of them don't.
Okay. Wow, a lot here in Vancouver, Canada, are using masks.
Mm-hmm.
and particularly Asian population who were that culturally was much more acceptable.
Yes.
And then when you get into more outlying areas, they're not so much. But yeah, it's good when we do that. But I found I've actually increased. I try for 10,000, 11,000 steps a day, and I find now I'm doing more than that because we make a point of getting out each day and you know, going through back lanes when places where there is nobody, and it's through forest walks where they've purposely distanced it or made it one way. Anyway,
well, you're living in a beautiful spot. Vancouver, Canada is one of the most beautiful
heaven,
cities.
Isn't it? Yeah, that's right. So back to lifestyle, what we really want for reducing our risk of all these chronic diseases is to get some exercise. Oh, and we also have an online fitness class that we just paid our instructor because the gym's closed that we used to go to. We paid her directly and do an online program Monday, Wednesday, Friday that involves balance, strength, and a bit of cardio. And then we do our walks as well as that. But you can really do some wonderful fitness things using the online tools that there are now.
Yes, and everything is out there, everything.
Yes,
and some of them
is.
Cost something, and then YouTube has a gazillion free videos, any
That's
kind of
right.
exercise you want, and dance.
So we decided to pay our instructor.
Oh,
and,
that's scary.
Just
that's because you're
one.
A lovely person.
Well, our group all really appreciated how she fitted it. Yeah, yeah. So.
Yeah, well, especially now when gyms are closed in many places, some of them are opening up in different areas. But these people, it's their livelihood, the trainers and the people that work there. And if you can support them for their experience and knowledge, that's a good thing. Next subject is fruits. And you have some suggestions about fruits and fruit juices and dried fruits and fruit and diabetes in many medical circles is a big no-no.
Yeah, people kind of generalize a bit too much on that. But if you use fruit and things like dates as your sweetener, it becomes much more reasonable. So we certainly haven't advocated drinking a lot of fruit juice, but it's more whole fruits, which have fiber in them, so they take quite a, you know, it takes more time to eat an apple than a spoonful of sugar, but it delivers some carbohydrates either way, but it's delivered in a much more gradual manner. Dates are what we've used. For example, you'll find on your real website, responsibleeatingandliving.com website, and then my event today, you'll see a chia pudding there that has dates in it. It has strawberries and blackberries on the top and in a little bowl. So something like that can be a breakfast or a dinner, a dessert, something like that. And you get a little bit of fruit. Like it shows one strawberry and two blackberries. Like it's kind of little moderate amounts, and you get that sweet effect, but it's not like the big load of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And even
we love dates,
can,
and we started buying them in bulk, 11 pounds of dates.
Uh-huh.
And we jar them, keep them all in the refrigerator, and we take a long time to go through them, but you know, we like to get the best price because sometimes dates can be very expensive in certain places.
Yeah, and, the medjool are a real treat, but we don't eat them all the time. Yeah.
No. And that's like if we have a dessert, even if we have one, and it might be two dates. And then that's it.
Yeah, that's right.
And they're so sweet.
Right. Yeah.
They are a little too sweet sometimes for me because I'm so used to not eating sweet foods.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But the thing with fruit, and again, I'm going to mention some studies, and I don't remember who did them or when. but the idea that eating the whole fruit with the fiber is beneficial. And even sometimes having the fruit juice, which is not as recommended because it doesn't have fiber. But if you have it with fruit that has fiber, or have a sweet refined food while eating a food with fiber, that food is digested better and more slowly. Fiber really like does magic.
It does, doesn't it? And we're not talking about some fiber supplement. We're talking about the fiber that's naturally in whole foods, whole plant foods.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. So what about a fiber supplement?
Well, they seem to be popular for people who are not on predominantly plant-based diets, because fiber is only in plant foods. So when people are eating a standard American diet that has very little fiber in it, maybe two-thirds the recommended levels or less than that, the fiber supplement can help because they at least get some. But it sure isn't the recommended way to go. Eating more plant foods is the recommended way to go. And every single plant food has fiber in it when you're talking about whole foods. If you're talking about any part of the plant, fiber is kind of a structural material in plants. And so it's in the leaves, in the fruit, in the stems, in the tubers under the ground. It's just in every part of the plant has fiber. And that's what really helps you get a good set of gut microbiota. All the microorganisms in our gut, they really rely on fiber. And that's what keeps us really healthy, is having that stream of fiber. So if somebody wasn't eating hardly any plant foods, you know, they were having meat and dairy, which have none, and things like pop as their beverage, they wouldn't get much fiber. So then the fiber supplement is at least better than nothing.
Okay, I'm jumping over to herbs and spices now. And you talk about the benefit of cinnamon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We put cinnamon in a lot of things, but I don't think most people realize that it has benefit.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, a lot of these, turmeric, cinnamon, and it's best to get the Ceylon cinnamon. So all of these are from plants and are particularly rich in certain protective phytochemicals and valuable components to add. So the herbs and spices that we've put in recipes in this Kick the Diabetes cookbook were chosen very carefully for different health benefits. And I guess a lot of indigenous people and people who understood folk medicine have added these and known of these parts of plants for millennia, but we're certainly including them in recipes when we want people to be really healthy.
Now, the next part of your book, before you get into the recipes, you include menus, and there are different serving sizes for different calories, 1,600 calories, 2,000 calories, 2,400 calories. And there are several different menus, and you talk about why you put them together and how you put them together. I'm looking at them, and it looks like a lot of food.
Well, it does, you know. When you don't waste some of your calories on sugar-containing beverages, you know, like sugar in your tea and coffee and fruit juice but even worse, pop. A lot of people get 25% of their calories from sugary beverages like sodas. Then you can eat more food, and you actually need to. So it's surprising that when things like that switch, you switch away from sugars, you switch away from oils. You know, a tablespoon of oil is close to 100 calories. And if your whole day's menu is 1,600, you know, just what you threw into your stir fry or something you fried, that can add a 1/16 of your calories for the day.
Just like that.
Yeah, it's easy. So so we've just focused on this. And, you know, people don't have to leap into these completely different patterns in one day. We certainly expect it to be a gradual, like when you start changing your diets towards more plant foods, you go down different aisles of the supermarket or go to the farmer's market near you and start seeing some different foods, and then you need to learn what to do with them. You know, okay, I've got some kale. What on earth do I do with it? You know, and make it not just chewing a rather rubbery leaf. I want to make this taste good. So it's a gradual evolution. And then when we say something like nuts and seeds, it starts that your salad dressings are composed of nuts and seeds, and they deliver your omega-3 fatty acids. The calcium-rich foods are actually also your legumes. Like if you have tofu that's set with calcium, that is both a legume and it's a calcium-rich food. And it's this high-protein food that's delivering lots of some fiber. You know, you get just many, many benefits from the whole foods. So it turns out not to be such a huge amount.
I'm looking at one of the pictures you sent me, which was the heartwarming hummus. And in the picture, there's five bowls of hummus, and they're beautiful colors. And I'm imagining not only is this a great thing for a party because the colors are so great, but I imagine it would appeal to children to eat healthy foods when they're so beautiful like this.
Oh, that's a good point. I've used that recipe. I did workshops for young people. It was called an environmental youth program, and these kids were all wanting to learn how to make healthy foods, but how to actually make them. And we found that hummus was something that people could so easily make. They mostly had a blender in their house, or you could just mash things. But then it was instantly there, and you could eat it with corn chips or something like that, or you could eat it with a big plate of colorful veggies, which is even healthier. Like if you're trying to
even better.
But I also was interested in hummus because my own daughter, who's now 52, but she was vegetarian before I was, she became anemic briefly. She was the kind of vegetarian that had eggs and dairy and lots of cheese for a while, and she ended up getting anemic when she was a teenager because dairy doesn't have iron, and it also somewhat blocks iron absorption, and eggs have a little bit of iron but not much. So she learned how to make hummus, and that just turned it right around because the chickpeas or whichever beans you use deliver iron as well as protein, fiber, B vitamins. And so that really helped. So she would make hummus every week, and of course as a teenager it was good for her to make something that was important to her, learn how to make it. And then she'd make it different. She didn't have quite this much of a color variety, but she'd put different herbs in and things. So what we did here, we called it heartwarming hummus, was use, for example, beets in one or chives in another, like a way to black bean hummus, just so they could be all kinds of different varieties. But it was still this combination of a bean and tahini and lemon juice that increases your iron absorption, and then some seasonings, and makes you not get bored with it.
Okay, I just want to do my hummus rant right now.
Oh, good. Okay.
My hummus rant.
Thank you.
Hummus is easy to make at home, and you should make your own hummus because most of the store-bought or most of the commercially available hummuses out there. Is that the plural of hummus? Hummuses? They're filled with stuff that you don't want. So hummus traditionally is made from chickpeas or garbanzo beans, as you call them, that's where the word hummus comes from. Hummus is the Hebrew or the Arabic word for the bean. And then you add the tahini to it, the lemon juice, and often it has olive oil and salt. And the commercial brands have just destroyed the hummus by adding not even olive oil, but soybean oil, which is often genetically modified. Of course, they're going to put preservatives in it because hummus is meant to be eaten when you make it. And after 3 or 4 days, it starts to go bad. And so they put preservatives in it so it can last a long time. And then it's overloaded with salt, of course. And it's just crazy because it's so easy to make and it shouldn't be contaminated like that.
It is. Good points you raise. Yeah.
So we put these are the things that make me mad, Vasanto. Because, well, as a vegetarian, a long-term vegetarian and vegan, hummus is something, I have an expression, at least there'll be hummus. When you go to a party or an event, you think, well, if there's nothing to eat, there'll be hummus. But the hummus that's often served is not the best.
That's true.
Soybean oil, the salt, the preservatives. And yeah. I just say, make it yourself. Yeah. There we go. That's my hummus rant. Thank you for listening.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Well, okay,
it can
so
sure
for
help
people
with a lot of things. Yep.
Okay. For people that are confused about sweeteners and sugar, and they want to know what the best sweeteners are, and you've intentionally left out things like maple syrup, but you have a recipe for date paste. Why is the simple date and date paste okay and all of these others not?
Well, we do limit how much we put in when we use dates or date paste. Like it ends up you don't put in the as high amounts, and it also comes with other nutrients. So that's the main feature. I mean, if you aren't eating foods with sugar, you just draw a line. And on the other side of that line, so there's all kinds of cookies and cakes and all that you don't eat. Now, one of the things that I have that I really rely on a lot are Bliss balls, and keep them in the freezer. And so we have a good recipe for Bliss balls. I actually learned this from a lovely young dietitian from Afghanistan who was I was mentoring a little bit. But they just have, it's on page 165, they have almonds, cashews, dates, limes, coconut, and either currants or some other dried fruit. And it's a little ball, like 2 tablespoons, and they really fill the bill. Like if you have one of those, it delivers so much nutrition. So I find when people are eating dates, they don't actually eat that many. Somehow they get tired of it. If they were trying to eat like 10 or something, so just eat like
they're too
you
sweet.
Say one or
yeah.
two. Or with these Bliss balls, like you have one and you feel quite satisfied because they do deliver that bit of sugar. If you have like 30 Bliss balls that you've rolled, that's dividing up a cup of pitted soft dates. So you don't get very much dates, but it still delivers this sweetness. And I just find that kind of thing really works. And it's a gradual delivery, but it does bring in some sweetness right away.
So I think what you've been telling us is that food can taste good without sugar and oil.
It is. Now, I never did figure out how to make a really good stir fry. That's the one thing. I made a stir sog, I think. But it's hard to get the temperature up, you know, without oil in the frying pan. You know, you bring it up a little bit higher. When you use water or vegetable broth or something, you only go up to 212 degrees Fahrenheit. Whereas with oils, you can get to a higher temperature and it just has a different outcome in the flavor. So that was the one thing I didn't find I could manage with whole foods and when you don't use any oil at all. Some people do something that's close to a stir fry, but that was the one thing that I found wasn't quite working.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose we have made lots of stir fries, but they don't have exactly the same taste.
Yeah.
And occasionally we'll go to a vegan Asian restaurant, Chinese food or Vietnamese style. And that's like the treat because they're using oil, they're using salt, they're probably using sugar. And we haven't had it in months because we are not going to restaurants anymore. And I don't know if I ever want to go to a restaurant again, frankly.
I know. It seems that's one of the fun things is people are learning how to cook, how to prepare food. So
yes, but I haven't quite figured out how to make that kind of food, as you mentioned, without oil and sugar and salt. Oh. I mean, I don't use a lot of salt either.
But you know what else? We got an air fryer. We actually got it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we've been making a tofu that this is going to be in our next book, which is about protein. But we just cut it in little cubes, marinate it, and have it in a slightly seasoned breadcrumbs mix, or you could use nutritional yeast. So it can be gluten-free or not, but you just put all your little cubes that are about a centimeter or half an inch in size, and they've got these crumbs on them, into the air fryer, and it's so instant. I'm quite thrilled with air fryer.
Mm. Yeah, we've done that a bit in an oven, but it does take longer than in an air fryer.
Yeah, it takes longer, and you have to heat up the whole oven, whereas with the air fryer, you just throw them in the little bowl, and in 12 or 13 minutes, they're done. So
yeah, I talked to Jael Fields a couple of years ago, I think, about the air fryer. She's got an air fryer cookbook out, and I never took the plunge. You know, how many appliances do we need in the kitchen?
That's right. So we won ours in one of those Christmas games where people have present games where you end up getting presents from each other and.
We ended up
with the air fryer.
That's good to know.
We were thrilled.
Yet to get an Instant Pot.
Oh, they're good too.
They're good too.
I can be out here doing an interview with you and have some lentils or something cooking away and not worry that they're going to burn black. I find that those two things are really handy.
Yeah, I know a lot of people swear by it.
Yeah. So, you got to get rid of some stuff, but those are two good ones. Yeah.
Okay, let's get back. We just have a few minutes left, and the subject is diabetes and focusing on your Kick Diabetes Cookbook. What's going on in North America regarding diabetes today?
Oh, it's just coming up to huge levels. So we've got more than one in three Americans has diabetes or pre-diabetes, more than one in three, and the numbers are just growing. And same in Canada, and it just seems to be an increasingly bad health condition. A lot of people have pre-diabetes, where their blood sugar levels are higher than normal, but not yet high enough to be type 2 diabetes. And so about 88 million American adults have prediabetes.
Wow.
And of those with prediabetes, more than 80% don't know they have it. So this is really an epidemic. And the interesting thing is this can be turned around. Like, this isn't a condition that you have to have, once you've got it, you're doomed. It can be really turned around. And so if you go for a year and your blood sugar is back to normal, you're considered not to be diabetic anymore. So that's why we were really focusing on this, because it can be turned around so much. Now, another interesting thing was I went down to True North, in Santa Rosa, California. So I personally always have really good food around, so I wanted to lose a few pounds. Actually, my dream was to lose about 15 pounds. And I went down in November and stayed till December. I went for a month. And actually, as it turned out, I lost 20 pounds. I wanted to get to my ideal body weight. And so doing something like that can, if you don't have that much discipline and you've always got good food around, it can really help because it's a fasting clinic. So it's True North, health promoting.
So were you there fasting?
I did 2 weeks on water fast. Yeah, okay. Water fast. So,
right, yeah, I did a water fast maybe 20 years ago. I haven't done one since.
Well, in that environment, it is very, very supportive. And there are interesting courses that you take. It's really relaxing. And I told you I get low blood sugar. You know, I have that kind of alcoholic, diabetic blood sugar fluctuation thing. So you'd think it would be difficult, but it wasn't because it was so relaxing and you're not allowed off the property and it's very well medically supervised. So
you're a
anyway,
prisoner. Self-imposed prisoner.
Yeah, and you also find it so relaxing, like just to be there peaceful. And I did a Zoom interview with my husband every evening, but otherwise it was just pretty relaxing. I mean,
that was
relaxing. Yeah, so anyway, that's a good thing for people that need to turn their weight around because that can help to turn around diabetes. Now, with our Kick Diabetes Cookbook, you can also lose weight. It's more gradual, of course, and also maintain weight without gaining, if that's your goal.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, Vasanto, I have not been to any vegetarian or vegan festivals or health conferences in a very long time. I used to go to them a lot, and I just don't anymore. There's a lot of reasons behind that, but that's when I used to see you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But
and,
I remember.
So I haven't seen you in a long time.
Oh, well, we'll be. We actually have thought of coming to New York, one of the places we'd like to go. Yeah. So maybe
okay,
we will.
Well, I hope you do visit. I don't know when New York is going to be like New York is known to be, and I hope we get
That's
back
right.
to that place and even better.
Yeah.
I hope we can break some intact grains when we're together.
And I hope that all the people listening and will end up having fun, have fun cooking and learn to cook in increasingly healthy ways.
Excellent. Well, Vasanto, you're going to come back sometime very soon. We're going to talk more about eating in a pandemic or eating to reduce risks of things like COVID-19. Okay, so we'll work on scheduling that. But for now, I'm going to thank you for joining me and for being who you are. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. That was Vasanto Molina, the co-author of the Kick Diabetes Cookbook, along with Brenda Davis. And I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Thanks so much for joining me, and have a delicious week.